It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
There will be 60 votes.
It's the same things they've been saying about every Republican nominee.
If we end up with that gridlock, I would say, if you can, Mitch, go nuclear.
If you can, Mitch, go nuclear. That was President Trump. This is Sandy Rios in the morning. It's Monday, and it is such a big week. Could I just say, Neil Gorsuch will be testifying for the first time. He is the candidate for Supreme Court. And, of course, so many things hanging in the balance, including, shall we say, that second immigration order issued by President Trump, legal, lawful, constitutional, legislatively, and yet an Hawaiian judge has stopped it. And so that's just one tiny issue. Then, of course, not tiny. And then, of course, we have the whole issue of life. We have the issue of the overreach of government. We have so many things, and that means that the Supreme Court, we have the out-of-control judiciary. The only people that can rein these rogue judges in are the Supreme Court justices. And so Neil Gorsuch hearing beginning today will be front and center, and we will be talking about that a great deal. In addition to that, we have the FBI director testifying this morning, beginning this morning, on Capitol Hill, and he's going to be asked about, of course, the Russians' interference in our election, which we already know is a complete farce. In fact, my understanding is that Democrats are actually backing away. The pundits are backing away because they know that there's no there. And they've overpromised. They've gotten their base all excited to think that it's because of the Russians that Donald Trump won, that Hillary Clinton lost. And so now they have to deliver evidence of that. But, of course, we know there is no evidence of that. And so we'll be hearing about that. Now, the thing of it is, we know, I personally think that the FBI director is no friend to President Donald Trump. I'm very sorry he allowed him to stay there, to be honest with you. I do think he's lost complete his trustworthiness, but he will be testifying, and I'm sure it will be fascinating to see what kinds of questions. One of the questions that they want to ask is who in the world, for instance, leaked the fact that it was Michael Flynn on the other side of a phone call talking to the Russian ambassador? Who did that? That's criminal. In fact, Rand Paul weighed in on that on the Sunday shows. This is clip 8. Let's listen.
We know one thing for sure, that the Obama administration did spy on Flynn. Now, whether it was direct or indirect, somebody was reading and taking a transcript of his phone calls, and then they released it. It is very, very important that whoever released that go to jail, because you cannot have members of the intelligence community listening to the most private and highly classified information and then releasing that to the New York Times. There can only be a certain handful of people who did that. I would bring them all in. They would have to take lie detector tests, and I would say, including the political people, because some political people knew about this as well. But we need to get to the bottom of who is releasing these highly classified conversations.
All right, and that goes to Director Comey. Well, you know, who is there? Somebody in his agency? We know that his second in command, his wife was recruited by the Clintons' chief fundraiser to run for Senate. Was given $500,000. He didn't disclose it on his forms for the FBI, his annual form about his income and where it comes from. He didn't say anything about this is the second in command, who was then tasked to be in charge of the investigation into Mrs. Clinton's email and the foundation. So there is some rotten stuff going on here. It should be a very interesting hearing today on Capitol Hill. Meanwhile, Angela Merkel, of course, was at the White House last week with President Trump, and they're making much about this, but I actually think it's a pretty powerful and kind of fun moment. Clip 3.
Do you think it was a mistake to blame British intelligence for this? And by the way, my second question, are there from time to time tweets that you regret?
Probably wouldn't be here right now, but so very seldom. We have a tremendous group of people that listen, and I can get around the media when the media doesn't tell the truth, so I like that. As far as wiretapping, I guess, by, you know, this past administration, at least we have something in common, perhaps. All we did was quote a certain very talented legal mind who was the one responsible for saying that on television. I didn't make an opinion on it.
All right, so, you know, again, President Trump is inarticulate. Angela Merkel is next to him. He's talking about her. She was wiretapped by President Obama and was very angry about this. So that's the comment he's making. At least we have this in common. And he was referring this talented reporter to Judge Andrew Napolitano on Fox, who said that from three different sources, we know that the Obama administration went beyond the NSA, the FBI, and the normal intelligence gathering forces, and went through British intelligence because they're able to wiretap or surveil an American citizen, including a president, and it's not illegal for them to do it. And then they got the information to the White House. Now, I interviewed Larry Johnson, who's a former CIA operative, on Washington Watch, and I was filling in for Tony Perkins last week, and he said the same thing before Andrew Napolitano reported that. Larry said that his inside information is that the whoever did this with the use of British intelligence. So now, you know, the Brits are having a fit. Oh, that's ridiculous. You know, there's no truth to that. How dare they say such a thing? But I'm telling you, you know, what do you expect them to say when it comes to espionage? What are they supposed to say? Is a Prime Minister May going to step forward and say, oh, yes, he's right, and we're so sorry? Don't count on that. So I found it really interesting that Charles Krauthammer has really, I think, become blind to this issue. I think that his disdain and intellectual snobbery, really, on President Trump is blinding him. And he continues to make statements like he made just yesterday. Let's listen.
Well, this is just, it's a farce now. The idea that we have in this town, the media, the agencies, the Congress are running around chasing their tails on a story that everyone knows is not true, but having to pretend that it might be because he's the president when we know how it's going to end. And the one thing about the HHQ, we've got a lot of real enemies in the world. Do we really have to go around antagonizing our best allies?
That's Charles Krauthammer. HDHQ is the British agency that insiders Larry Johnson, including Larry Johnson that I spoke to last week, say was involved in surveilling Trump Tower and Donald Trump himself. So I don't know. Maybe I should have Larry Johnson call Charles Krauthammer. I don't know. But we're going to find out a little bit. I don't expect that the FBI director will say more than he just absolutely has to, because I don't think he's going to do anything that would help the president. I really don't. So that's going to happen this morning. And in a few minutes, by the way, we're going to talk to Frank Gaffney, and we'll circle back on this topic to talk with Frank. Hey, I just want to take, there are a lot of things happening today. The FBI director is testifying. Neil Gorsuch is coming before the committee to open the hearings for him to be Supreme Court nominee. We've got this new budget, which I want to talk about, which is just, I think it's wonderful, the way it cuts back on spending. And, of course, the Trump executive order a week ago today, I think it was, cutting down these agencies by huge percentages, trying to just weed out the waste. It's just it's a thing of wonder. Don't we each need to do that in our lives? And the federal government never does it. And so we'll talk more about that as well. But I want to get practical and personal just for a second. Something else is happening at the end of this week. I'm going to be in Dallas. For those of you that are listening from Texas, if you would like to come see me, I'd love to see you. I'd love to meet you. I'll be at First Baptist Church Dallas next Sunday evening at 5:30. And I'll be speaking there in their LaVorne Hall. We'll put that on our Facebook page so you can see it, because it's a big place. And I don't want you to wander around and then come get there at 6 o'clock and we're into it quite a bit. So it's going to be at 5:30 at Lavorne Hall at First Baptist Church in Dallas next Sunday night at 5:30. So I hope that you'll come and join us, make a note of it, and see if you can make those plans on a busy Sunday night. We'll be done by 7. All right, so then here's another story. Of course, the health care bill continues to be a huge issue. And it's interesting to me that Mark Meadows and Ted Cruz and Mike Lee flew to Mar-a-Lago and met with Steve Bannon and other advisors over the weekend. This thing is still being fleshed out. And I'm still not sure which way it's going to come down. I would like for you to hear Mark Meadows talk about it. He was interviewed on Fox, and I think rather I could have Mark on, but here's what he said, and you can listen to it from his mouth, cut 5.
Kellyanne knows me personally. I know her personally. I know the president personally. I campaigned with him in North Carolina, and what he talked about was repealing Obamacare. This bill is just Obamacare in a different form. Kellyanne may know that, but I can tell you, if you just look at the bill text, the very first paragraph says it amends the Affordable Care Act. It doesn't repeal it. And so the American people want us to repeal it and replace it with something that is different. And certainly, I want to drive down those health care costs. Let me tell you, what I've seen of the plan so far, it does nothing to actually lower health care costs and premiums for hardworking American taxpayers. And so that's what we've got to do. I'm committed to do that. You know, we met last night with Mr. Mulvaney, the director of OMB. We're talking about a number of suggestions to try to address that in a real way. But today, there's not 218 votes. I've talked to the president, and he knows I'm open to negotiations. We put forth last night in our Freedom Caucus 3 people with health care backgrounds to try to look at coming up with real ways to come to a consensus. I believe we can do that on behalf of the American people. But there's one score bill that matters, and that is health insurance premiums must come down. If they don't, we have failed. We've repealed. We've gone through all this headache for nothing. And so I look forward to some robust debate as we do it. I can tell you, if this were a repeal of the current law, we wouldn't walk away from it. This doesn't do that, Bill. I've made a living all my life when I wasn't in Congress of negotiating, bringing two sides together, or I didn't get paid. I'm committed to do that. I'm willing to stay in the room to do that. Well, I'm saying that some repeal bill and some replacement bill will get done. Whether it's this one or not, the jury is still out.
Congressman Mark Meadows, last night on Fox. Now, you can see the Freedom Caucus that Congressman Meadows from North Carolina heads is working so hard. They have laid it all on the line here to stop this bill. If it hadn't been for them, it would have been absolutely railroaded through. And I told you last week, and I will repeat, that there is a lot of money going into these districts of 30 of the Freedom Caucus members to defeat them, claiming that they are fighting against Donald Trump and they won't repeal Obamacare. And I told you, but I will repeat because I want you to hear it, that the person behind this, it's being run by a bunch of John Boehner staffers. Remember, John Boehner was bad. Remember, that's why he's not there anymore, because he was undermining the will of the American people on immigration and anything else, doing the bidding of the Chamber of Commerce. And now Karl Rove is behind the money of this PAC to defeat these Freedom Caucus members. Listen last night as Karl made his comments on Fox. Cut 6.
You're going to have Mark Meadows on shortly, who says he objects to the tax credits. Well, in May of 2015, he signed on as a co-sponsor of then Congressman Tom Price's repeal and replace bill, which included even more robust tax credits than are in this bill. He's already endorsed that.
Well, if Karl Rove wants to bring out his whiteboard and we want to debate it back and forth on health care, I welcome that. You know, if Karl Rove wants to look at Tom Price's bill, he needs to look at Section 2 and Section 3 of the bill that I endorse. It repealed the mandates. It repealed the insurance mandates. It actually did what we're promising the American people. This is not Tom Price's bill. This is certainly not what we promised the American people. Karl Rove knows that. You know, this is smoke and mirrors when we suggest that we're going to dupe the American people. We're going to do this bill behind closed doors and roll it out and expect the American people to believe it. Let me just tell you, they're smarter than that, and they understand that this is just Obamacare with a different label.
All right, I want you to be smarter than that, and that's why I played that clip. Karl Rove Boehner staffers are trying to destroy the Freedom Caucus members because they've been trying to do that for a long time. So healthcare is just another opportunity for them to blame the stoppage of this supposedly fabulous bill not being willing to overturn Obamacare. It's not true. It's a lie. It's an insidious kind of little game they play, and we have to make sure that is not effective and it doesn't work. Coming up next, Frank Gaffney will talk to us about what's happened in Hawaii. Sandy Rios in the morning.
From Samaritan's Purse and Franklin Graham comes Facing Darkness. In 2014, as the Ebola virus was devastating West Africa,
the numbers of new cases and deaths are still rising.
International relief organization Samaritan's Purse stepped up.
God has called us to care for the dying, to care for those that are suffering.
We can't say we're Samaritan's Purse and not help.
My phone rang. One of our doctors, Kent Brantley, has Ebola.
And then David looked at me and he said, "You too have Ebola."
We're there to save life. We're there in your name. Why?
Despite the fact that things were out of control, we knew that God was in control.
God puts you in places and supplies the strength to deal with.
Jesus Christ didn't run. We run to the fire. We don't run away from it.
Facing Darkness, a true story of faith. In select cinemas for one night only, Thursday, March 30th. For theaters and tickets, go to facingdarknessmovie.com. That's facingdarknessmovie.com.
American Family Radio. Equipping you to change the culture.
My name is Teresa. I own a taxi business. I drive all day long. I pick up people, take them to the doctor all day long. One day I climbed into my van, and I never even knew this radio station existed, and it was just on. And I believe with all my heart that God put it on the radio for me. I am a witness for the Lord. I have had lots of opportunity to lead people to the Lord. Listening to your station only gives me more confidence. I have followed in faith by opening this company, and AFR just really lifts me up in spirit and lets me know that I'm doing the right thing. Just encourages me and my clients.
Your partnership makes a difference. Join us for our 3-day share-a-thon starting April 4th. American Family Radio, boldly standing for truth for your family.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with this Fox News and Commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
So my name is Atara. I'm a senior, and my major is psychology. I love Truett. There may be a lot of other schools out there. You can go to bigger schools. You can go to schools that's way far away from home. But in the end, one of the things that I realized is that God called me here, and that's why Truett is the perfect place for me. And if God called you here, then it's the perfect place for you all.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
There's a pretty good chance Connor Cox will never forget to take out the trash. Connor's a freshman at Westminster College in Pennsylvania. The other day, he received two care packages from his mom. One contained all sorts of tasty treats, but the other was filled with garbage. Connor picked up the phone and called home, wanting to know why his mom mailed him a box of trash. She told her son with a chuckle that it was the trash he had forgotten to take out the last time he was home. Turns out Mrs. Cox is a bit of a prankster. ABC News reports mother and son shared a good laugh. Then Connor shared a picture of the garbage on Twitter, and it went viral, as these things are apt to do. Connor says he's got the best mom in the whole world. And I suspect the next time he's home, Connor will remember to take out that trash and hug his mom, too. I'm Todd Stearns.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. One fact speaks volumes about the fight over President Trump's new executive order imposing a temporary pause on immigration from countries awash with jihadism. The federal judge in Hawaii blocked its implementation nationwide to accommodate a Muslim Brotherhood-tied Sharia supremacist from Egypt, who claims it would cause him irreparable harm because, for 90 days, it would preclude him from bringing his Syrian mother-in-law into the United States. Not only is Judge Derek Watson's ruling affirming such a bogus claim laughable, its practical implications are dangerous. Under the Constitution and federal statutes, the president has complete authority to restrict immigration. It is judicial malpractice to hold otherwise, especially when doing so as a practical matter gives anyone anywhere in the world the right to come here. President Trump must be able to protect us. Support his executive order at immigrationpause.org. This is Frank Gaffney.
All right, Sandy Rios, back with you. If that sounded strange, like, wait a second, that's not in order. And I think I heard that before last Friday. That's because I wanted you to hear it again. Frank is our guest every single morning at 8:40, not at 8:20. But he is a national treasure. Frank founded and is the president of Center for Security Policy. And here's the thing. The president signed a second executive order trying to make this country safe, to increase the vetting, to make sure we don't bring people in from particularly dangerous terrorist countries. He's listed six. The seventh has begun to vet their own, Iraq, at a better, higher standard than they had before. But a Hawaiian judge, just one guy out in Hawaii who happened to go to law school with President Obama, who happened to just talk with President Obama shortly before he'd issued this order, has stopped the whole thing. And so I've asked Frank to join me this morning to expand on what he said in his commentary about what this is all about and what the repercussions of this are for all of us. Frank Gaffney, thanks for joining us this morning.
It's great to be with you, Sandy, and I have to tell you, I was one of those who was a little thrown off by the repeating of that, but thank you for doing it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, you're not used to hearing yourself, but we are, and honestly, Frank, you just add so much value to the program every morning. I tell you that every time I see you, but I want to emphasize this: you really are a national treasure. 60 seconds of Frank Gaffney is worth like an hour of most people, so thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you,
Sandy. All right, so Judge Derek Watson, he's a buddy of Obama, was a law school friend, and he is the judge in Hawaii. Tell us about what you know beyond that, if there is anything more to know.
Well, reportedly, I haven't had a chance to study this or confirm it, but reportedly he had dinner with Barack Obama shortly before issuing this ruling. So I guess one of the things that is open to question is, how independent and objective was the judge in making his ruling? But, you know, quite apart from whether he was being nakedly partisan and doing the bidding of a man who has made it pretty clear he intends to do everything in his power to subvert his successor, namely Donald Trump, as President Trump tries, frankly, to undo the devastating legacy of the Barack Obama presidency. But beyond that, Sandy, the point is, as I tried to convey in that commentary, this judge, Derek Watson, has engaged in judicial malpractice. He is supposed to be guided in rendering rulings by the Constitution, by the statutes that are the law of the land. And in both cases, he summarily ignored them. The Constitution, which gives the president authority for protecting our country as commander-in-chief, and statutes, which couldn't be more clear, give the president the authority to keep out of this country people who, in his exclusive judgment, are not compatible with our national interests or security. And for the judge to do this, and he's not the only one, in fairness, there have been several other judges, including one in Washington State, one very recently in Baltimore, three on the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, who have made similar errors and I think malpractice. But his is particularly egregious because what it basically did was give a Sharia supremacist in Hawaii, the plaintiff in this case, an opportunity to bring to a screeching halt the exercise by the President of the United States of that constitutional and statutory authority on the grounds that his mother-in-law is being inconvenienced. But in practice, what that really means, especially coming on the heels of these other rulings, is to undermine presidential authority and create a whole new class of people who have constitutional rights that are not entitled to them, and are unfortunately, as a result, almost certainly going to make a concerted effort to get into this country when they should not be allowed to do so.
You know, Frank, just the bullet points of what you just said, you think about that, that this judge had allegedly, we think, had dinner. That surely can be verified by some news source. They should be reporting that he had dinner with the president right before issuing this ruling. It also should be reported.
The former president. To be
former
clear.
President. Thank you. We should also be reporting that this case centers on, and I want to expand on this a bit, the head of the largest mosque in Hawaii, who is a Muslim Brotherhood operative. Let's talk about who he is and a little bit more in detail, Frank, about what his claim is, because he is the one really at the center of stopping this. And the whole idea of the vetting and of stopping people from these six now countries is to stop Islamic influence, Sharia law, terror in this country. So what can you tell us about the head of this mosque in Hawaii?
Well, let me just define my terms here for a moment. When I say he's a Sharia supremacist, that's a term that I think those of you who've been listening to my commentaries are familiar with, but many of us, altogether too many of us, still aren't. By that I mean someone who adheres to what he considers, and for that matter, the authorities of Islam consider to be the true faith, which is signed by this doctrine they call Sharia. Now, not all Muslims do. Many, in fact, believe that they can be faithful Muslims without thinking that women are property, that homosexuals should be killed, that Jews should be killed, that apostates should be killed, that females who engage in adultery or even are accused of adultery should be killed. I mean, this kind of barbarity is not only, you know, totalitarian and totally at odds with our traditions and freedoms and constitution and values, but it's an abomination, you know, morally and in every other respect. Sharia-adherent Muslims, nonetheless, believe that they are not only entitled to engage in such conduct, it is Allah's will that they do so. One of these folks is Imam Ismail El-Sheikh. El-Sheikh, I may get that pronunciation wrong, but El-Sheikh is the name of this chap, who leads the largest mosque in Hawaii and who is known to be associated with the Muslim Brotherhood because the organization that owns the mosque's mortgage, called the North American Islamic Trust, has been demonstrated in federal court, is in fact a project of the Muslim Brotherhood. It's kind of their bank. It buys up mortgages of mosques and enables them to control them. So Sharia supremacism, which is, of course, the leitmotif of the Brotherhood, is what this guy is about. And to find ourselves being dictated to, effectively, by him through Judge Derek Watson is not only an affront, given what he's all about and trying to do in our country, but it is simply national security fraud to think that that's compatible with our security interests.
You know, Frank, to add injury to insult, Ann Corcoran of Refugee Resettlement Watch reports that Hawaii, now this is all supposed, okay, the other part of this is supposedly about, you know, these poor Syrian refugees, and I'm using that facetiously because, of course, any refugee fleeing from harm is a subject of sympathy, so I speak facetiously because that's being used as a very broad term to let a lot of people who are in no way Syrian refugees but have another intent by coming here, so that's who really is having the advantage with this lack of enforcement. But in regard to the refugees, Hawaii takes hardly any. So of the 49 states participating in the federal refugee resettlement program, only Mississippi has taken in fewer refugees than Hawaii since 2002. Only 127 have been sent to Hawaii since 2002. And they've been from Burma and Vietnam. Almost zero have been from the six nations on his list. So this judge in Hawaii, you know, in protection and in order to help the refugees who are being so mistreated, has nothing to do with Hawaii, who are not even taking these refugees in. I find that really, it's just on every level a terrible thing that we can't let pass.
Miscarriage of justice, I think, is the term you're searching for there.
Thank you.
It's not even clear that this woman is a refugee. It sounds as though, you know, she's just somebody who would come here to the country to visit her family, perhaps, or for some other reason, I don't know. But the point is well taken, Sandy. This has nothing to do with trying to accommodate large numbers of people in Hawaii who are coming here fleeing terrible oppression and all the rest of it. And what Donald Trump has said, quite simply, is we want to make sure that people who are coming into this country, whether it's as refugees or whether it's as immigrants, share our values. That's a very simple test. It's not always simple to practice, but what he's trying to do, I think, is to use Sharia as one of the means by which you evaluate whether they are trying to come here to share our values and to be part of the American dream or to destroy this country, as Sharia dictates. So all of these are important points that I think are well within the responsibility of the president. And frankly, I think it's what he was elected to fix, because people were sick to the teeth of what Barack Obama had been doing previously, which was essentially to ramp up immigration without regard for the security implications, even at a moment when we have been told repeatedly that groups like the Islamic State and Al-Qaeda are using these refugee flows or other immigrants to bring into countries like ours. We see a lot of this in Europe, by the way, but also here, people who wish us harm. So that's the point of all this. And Sandy, if I could just plug the
yes, please. That was the next question.
People to visit, if they share my view and yours, I think, that Donald Trump is doing what we hired him to do and need him to do, a way to express support for him and learn more about this and find out how you can help is at immigrationpause.org. I hope all of your listeners will go over there and take a look at it and join us if they care to.
Okay, immigrationpause.org. Is it? It's a place where they can sign, give their email address. What do they do, Frank? Are they? Do they give their names?
Yeah, there's a petition. Most immediately, there's a petition, but it enables them to become part of the team that we believe is out across this country, but has not been heard from very much. People who elected Donald Trump to be president of the United States. People who believe in what he's trying to do, particularly in restoring peace through strength and borders and ensuring that people who are coming here aren't able to come here willy-nilly, even if they're jihadists, and yet have not been much heard from, or at least have not been able to get their voices amplified in the face of this incredible domination of the media by the hard left, by the Islamists, by people who are seeking to suppress the voices of so many Americans who feel as I've just described. So,
you know,
this is a vehicle for doing something about it, and we welcome their support.
Frank, we just did an entire program on the Islamization of Europe on Friday. And by the way, if those of you listening did not listen to that program, it is just, it's amazing, and it is our future if we don't do something. So if you're feeling kind of laissez-faire about doing something today, don't do that, because it's time to act. I actually think we could pull this back. We have a president who wants to do that, but we have to continue to support him. And so certainly it would be a good thing to go to immigrationpause.org, immigrationpause.org. It will give you information to share with your friends about this, the stuff that Frank and I have been discussing here, and also give you a chance to actually just do something. Immigration.org, immigrationpause.org, immigrationpause.org. We'll be putting it on our Facebook page so that you can share it. But if you don't have a Facebook page, I hope you just heard that. My guest is Frank Gaffney with Center for Security Policy. And when we return, I want to sort of, we'll do a few follow-up things on this, but then I want to turn to just the broader issue of what's happening with our national security, what's happening inside the Trump White House in terms of appointments and other things like that. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Steve Tiber of 8 Days of Hope.
Our great country continues to get slammed by natural disasters. Hurricanes and tornadoes, flooding. I mean, it's everywhere from Texas, South Carolina, to Georgia, Mississippi, all throughout the country, our country has suffered. Here's where you and I get a chance to be a glimpse of Jesus. It is so cool to meet a homeowner who has gone to no fault of their own. Their world has been turned upside down, and you get a chance to bless them. You know, we tarp roofs and do chainsaw work, and we gut homes that flooded right after disaster with our rapid response team. And then we also look to rebuild homes with 8 Days of Hope, like we've done 12 different areas of the country. 1,800 homes, $25 million of damage. People all the time say, man, you're good. Well, we're not that good, but he is great. Be a part of something unique. 8 Days of Hope.
Learn more at 8daysofhope.com.
Physicians keep learning after medical school in order to better save lives. Shouldn't Christian leaders keep learning to better save souls? Hi, I'm Dr. John Nyhoff, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi, and online around the world. Are you a Christian leader who thinks it's important to keep learning? WBS online weekend and evening classes allow graduate students to become better equipped to make disciples in a constantly changing world. For more information, visit wbs.edu.
This is Tim Armstrong from the Worthy Walk radio program. I encourage you to listen as we work verse by verse through the scriptures each Sunday at 9:30 a.m. Central Time here on American Family Radio. Join me as we explore the Word of God and learn to apply its truths to our lives each day. The Worthy Walk radio program, Sundays at 9:30 a.m. Central Time on American Family Radio.
Whoa, we have not had a response like this before. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. We've been doing these spiritual heritage tours for like 20 years. We're sold out for June already, if you can believe that. We've got space left on our September tours of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon, and then Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown. We call them spiritual heritage tours, and I don't know how long these September seats will last. To what do you attribute that to, someone might ask? Maybe it's the fact that we have a new person occupying the White House. Maybe that has something to do with it. But in any event, we welcome you to come with us on our September Spiritual Heritage Tour of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon and Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown. Those are two separate trips. You can do both, or you can do one or the other. We'd love to have you. Go to spiritualheritagetours.com. spiritualheritagetours.com.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The Chinese leadership may be concluding it can treat the Trump administration the same way it did President Obama, namely, like a doormat. Initially, President Trump flirted with ending the so-called One China policy, whereby his predecessors, going back to Jimmy Carter, had thrown Taiwan under Beijing's bus. Then, unceremoniously, that idea went over the side. At his confirmation hearing, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson warned that the U.S. might blockade the man-made and fortified islands China is preparing to use to control the Western Pacific. Just before he met with Chinese leaders this weekend, they announced the construction of yet another one. Mr. Tillerson nonetheless echoed China's false claims to want, quote, non-confrontation, unquote, and, quote, win-win cooperation, unquote, in our bilateral relations. That will likely be read as weakness and an invitation for China to act aggressively. We better set them straight. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. My guest is Frank Affney, who you just heard on the commentary. You hear him every morning on this program at 8:40. But let me just say, the order by the judge in Hawaii, Judge Derek Watson, stopping the executive order, the second one on immigration to stop refugee resettlement, to increase vetting, 90-day pause, is a very serious situation. You've heard Frank and I just discuss the fact that it came out of an imam of the largest mosque in Hawaii who claims his mother-in-law now can't come for 90 days. And that's the basis of the lawsuit. You also heard us say that Hawaii takes hardly any, almost zero refugees, certainly from the six countries, and they've only taken a little over 100 refugees since 2003. So Hawaii has no interest, no vested interest. You also heard us say that Judge Derek Watson had dinner, reportedly, with former President Barack Obama just before he issued the order. This is dangerous stuff. And if you would like to do something as a pushback, go to immigrationpause.org. Immigrationpause.org. Sign your name to the petition. Share this website. Let's build it big time. Big. I sound like President Trump. Let's build it so that we have a very large list to support the president. Yeah, it would be huge if you go to immigrationpause.org. And let's do it in fun and in purpose. It would be a great tool. Frank, before we move on, this other thing we just must mention is that 30 countries are refusing to take back illegal immigrants convicted of Syria. Oh, you know what? This is actually a slightly different topic. I was thinking this was from Muslim countries, but it is not. But I will mention this, that 30 countries are refusing to take back illegal immigrants. And even Democrat Henry Swelaar, I think his name's, I don't know if that's the right pronunciation. He's a Democrat. He's very upset about this. In fact, the United States is then releasing these criminals on the streets while still issuing visas and student visas to citizens of those countries. Frank, I don't know if there are any of those are Islamic countries or not. Maybe you do.
I'm not sure, Sandy, but I'd be kind of surprised because among other places from which we are receiving illegal immigrants are from some of the countries that we're worried about. And you know, it's been pointed out that there are Muslim countries that are not subject to the president's executive order, which belies this whole contention that this is somehow a Muslim ban. But among those that we're taking in illegal immigrants from are countries that are imbued with this Sharia supremacism. And I think getting them out of this country, if there are grounds for doing so, they've come here illegally for one thing, but especially if they have been engaged in criminal activity, is again just common sense, Sandy. And it's one of the things that President Trump promised to do on the campaign trail. He is now doing it, and I think he deserves both our commendation and our support.
Frank, let's change the subject ever slightly. James Comey is testifying this morning before a House committee, and he's testifying on whether the Trump campaign was involved with the Russians and whether the Russians, you know, helped him get elected, basically. That's the allegation. And the second part is this whole notion of Donald Trump claiming that he was wiretapped, that President Obama ordered a wiretap of the White House. Before you say anything, I want you to hear just this short clip of Charles Krauthammer last night on Fox. Let's listen. This is clip two.
Well, this is just, it's a farce now. The idea that we have in this town, the media, the agencies, the Congress are running around chasing their tails on a story that everyone knows is not true, but having to pretend that it might be because he's the president when we know how it's going to end. And the one thing about the HGHQ, we've got a lot of real enemies in the world. Do we really have to go around antagonizing our best allies?
All right, that was apologies. That was last Friday. Special report, Charles Krauthammer. Okay, Frank, it's everybody knows this is a farce, right? That the Russians did not wiretap the Trump Tower. There's nothing to this story. It's silly.
Well, you just, I think, inadvertently conflated two pieces of the story, Sandy. One is whether the Russians were involved in hacking in ways that interfered with our election, as the Democrats have insisted for months and months now, is one piece of it. The other piece of it is, as President Trump has contended, did the U.S. government or somebody else working on its behalf use surveillance means to monitor what was going on in the course of the campaign in 2016 for Donald Trump in Trump Tower or perhaps elsewhere. And there's been a lot of to-ing and fro-ing on this. I think one of the things that, as best I can tell, we will hear today from the various worthies who are going to be testifying, including the FBI director, is that there is no evidence of the first of those two stories. That the Russians may have been hacking but that it didn't actually impact the course of the election. And most especially the suggestion, which again is the sort of subtext of the Democrats' charge, that Mike Flynn or Jeff Sessions or Paul Manafort or somebody associated with the Trump campaign was actually colluding with the Russians for the purpose of undermining our democratic process. That just doesn't actually comport with any facts that have come to light so far, and apparently there aren't any out there yet to come. We'll see. The second issue is the one that the president's raised, and that is, was he under surveillance? There have been now a succession of reports indicating he was. We're most recently being told that actually those reports are wrong. I guess we'll get some further clarity on this. He says he's got more information that he's going to be making available in the next few days. Again, we'll see. But the point is that I think what we've definitely seen in connection with the first of these two scandals is that there have been, maybe still are, people inside the Trump administration who have been using access to classified information for the purposes of subverting his presidency. And that is a huge problem, Sandy, and I think warrants an investigation in its own right.
You know, Frank, I interviewed Johnson last week, who was a former CIA chief, not the head, but one of the chiefs. And he said without hesitation that his inside sources are telling him that the British intelligence did cooperate, and that was the way that the administration, the Obama administration, got around the prohibition of our security agencies surveilling Americans. So he made that claim, and I think that's where Andrew Napolitano at least got one of his sources. It was pretty compelling. But I just think the whole notion that it's foolish or that it's or that couldn't possibly have happened is also silly. Because, you know, we just talked, you and I, about how it seems as though the president, former, had dinner with this judge in Hawaii just before the order was issued to stop the president's second immigration halt order. So we have a little evidence here that the former president is kind of busy trying to. We also know about organizing for action. I think they're calling it that now, which the president is, former president, is all over. He's making videos. He's encouraging people to go out in the streets and resist Trump. So why would it be a shock that President Barack Obama might have surveilled Trump Tower through whatever means possible? Why would that be such a stretch?
Well, again, I think you could see there's some basis for speculating about motive. But you still have to get to the facts of did he do it or not. And I think at the moment the jury is still out on that. There are people who say, no, there's no case to be made there. There's no factual basis for this. In fact, I can't think of a report about all of this in the press since President Trump famously tweeted about the wiretap on Trump Tower that hasn't been prefaced by the statement without evidence when they're describing his charge. We need to see the evidence to the extent that that can be done without, again, compromising national security secrets and the means by which such secrets are obtained. And this is one of the stories, of course, that came to light through WikiLeaks in the midst of all of this, Sandy, as you know, revelations that the Central Intelligence Agency has proven the capability, and presumably other intelligence services have as well, of using devices, televisions, and God only knows what else, refrigerators, heating units, so on, connected to the internet as means of collecting information about what's going on inside the places where those things are located. And not only that, but also being able to obscure the fingerprints, if you will, of any such penetration. So all of these things are extraordinarily sensitive issues, I believe. I'm quite concerned are compromising very important intelligence methods, not for surveilling our own people or certainly our presidential candidates, but our enemies. in order to keep us safe. And I'm afraid that in the course of this inquiry, we're going to see some of that critically important means of conducting intelligence compromised.
Frank, the other thing that we've been following here on the show is, and I know you are too, of course, are the appointments inside the White House on national security. We only have 3 minutes left, so this is going to be a truncated discussion. But Ann Patterson was an ambassador to Egypt. She would have been a disaster. She was an operative of the Muslim Brotherhood pretty openly. And in Egypt, the people under the Sisi, General Sisi, Egyptian loyalists who were anti-Muslim Brotherhood, hate her. And yet Defense Secretary Mattis nominated for a top Pentagon spot. We just found out this morning, I did, that that's not going to happen. And I thank God for that. That's just an example of several different kinds of appointments that we are concerned about. I'm reading good news and bad news about what's going on in the Trump administration in regard to national security. What are your thoughts this morning on the state of that?
Well, just to spare you unnecessary aggravation, I don't think you mean to say she was an operative of the Muslim Brotherhood, but she certainly was someone who was very sympathetic to it and did a lot in her role as ambassador to Egypt, and subsequently, I believe she was the Assistant Secretary of State for Middle Eastern Affairs, to promote the Brotherhood and the idea of the Obama administration that we should rely on them as our preferred interlocutors in the Middle East and with the Muslim community. This was a terrible mistake. It was a terrible appointment. Fortunately, the White House prevailed, and General Mattis, now Secretary of Defense Mattis, as you say, pulled her back. But there is a lot of this going on. A friend of mine and yours, as a matter of fact, told me the other day that there are about 7 or 8 people inside the White House at the moment who actually understand the nature of the threat we're facing from this, I think the best term for it, Andy McCarthy coined, is Sharia supremacy. These are people who are essential, I think, to the kind of corrective action that President Trump has promised to make. And yet there are 200 or 300 or 400 other people who don't get that and who are, by and large, people who are working for President Obama in exactly the opposite direction. So these are very challenging times. I'm pleased to say that Secretary Mattis has begun to put some other people who I think are more sensible in some of the positions down the food chain. But he's got some key jobs, like the one that Ann Patterson was nominated for, the Undersecretary of Defense for Policy, that have to be filled by people who are sensible about the critical threat of our time, which is, as I say, Sharia supremacy and the effort to impose it on the rest of us.
You know, Frank, it's not just what might happen here domestically. We don't need to paint pictures or make up stories. We've seen what's happened in San Bernardino and Orlando, but we have our soldiers. Three were killed or wounded over the weekend in an insider attack in Afghanistan, and that has to do with rules of engagement, with the whole view of what we're doing over there. These things have consequences to our lives and the lives of our soldiers, our citizens. And so we must take them seriously, and that's why Center for Security Policy is on the tip of the spear, really, when it comes to presenting the importance of preserving our democracy and vetting these people coming into our country and making sure that America stays strong. And let me just say, immigrationpause.org, immigrationpause.org is the website. You can go and lend your support and also share it with others to enforce this second immigration order by President Donald Trump. What's your name? Frank Gaffney. Frank, thanks for joining me this morning. I appreciate so much of your valuable time. Thanks for giving it to us this morning.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you, Sandy.
Okay, talk to you soon. All right, this has been Sandy Rios. It's a Monday, and we're off to the races. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.